on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, October 9th, 2025 edition, and we are solidly into the fourth quarter. Soon, everybody will be buying Halloween costumes and Halloween candy. Comes up fast. I know we're already looking at, you know, office holiday events, activities, and we're rapidly going to embark on a new year soon. So this is an interesting time. It's a time to kind of refocus as we enter the final stretch of the year and to prepare for that new year that usually brings different challenges, different trends, and make sure that you're rebalancing properly, understanding the risks in your portfolio, understanding the opportunities that are out there. So that's what this show is about. It's about giving you perspective and data, answering your finance and investment questions so that you are prepared, not just for this quarter or the next, but for years ahead. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Rob calling from Las Vegas. With cash and fixed income rates starting to move lower, I'm looking at some option strategies like covered calls that can possibly enhance equity income. I was hoping that you could look at an ETF for me. Ticker symbol is DYLG. It's the Global Dow 30 Covered Call and Growth ETF. Just wanted to get your thoughts on this particular ETF and the strategy moving forward. I'll be listening to your answer on the next podcast. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at the Global X Dow 30 Covered Call and Growth ETF. And this is simply a covered call strategy on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Now, let me back up and talk about covered calls. And now, we run a covered call strategy. It's called Equity Income Plus. It's great. But most people, especially with these new products that are out here, like this one, they're not understanding the strategy at all. And they're getting distracted by the shiny object of what the yield looks like. They'll say, hey, it has this particular yield. And they'll get caught up in that. And the reality of the situation is most of the time that's not actual yield. Now, there is income coming in to the portfolio by selling the covered calls. That's what we do. But it really has a different mechanism. It's really a mechanism to dampen volatility. And that can dampen volatility in both directions. Understand that. And it can also enhance performance, especially in times where markets are choppier or even trending down. And you get an edge because you're selling those call options and you're keeping the premium for the most part. In a market like this, with it trending higher, it's going to hold back the performance a little bit. And so you have to be okay with that and understand that, yeah, year to date, this is only up 7.5%. Now, if I go look at the Dow, actually, not Dow Chemical, DIA, which is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I look at the performance for the year, it is up 10.8%. So you can see it's underperforming the overall market. Now, you have to be okay with that. That's what you want to look at. Any of these covered call ETFs, whether it's on a particular sector, especially when it's on a particular stock, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, don't pay attention to the yield at all. At all. It's going to cloud your judgment. What you want to look at is total return. And frankly, that's the case for the vast majority of anything you're looking at. And so it's very easy to get caught up in that dividend yield and make also think that it's safer, right? You can still have bad years. 2022, for example. Let's see if this was around in 2022. No, it was not. Okay. But most cover call ETFs were still down. So just because they had yield, they were still, total return was down because the market was down. So I say this all the time. Stop focusing on the yield. Focus on what the asset class is invested in, what the ETF is invested in, or what the obviously individual company business is, and focus on the quality there and the value and the trends within the sector, within the individual company, or the asset class. That's far more important than some big shiny yield. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is about mortgage rates dropping. Federal Reserve's recent rate cut means that analysts from Fannie Mae and the NAHB, National Association of Home Builders, they're upgrading their forecast or updating their forecast to what the mortgage rates will be for this year, next year, and beyond. So we'll look at those forecasts, what that ultimately will mean for the housing market. We have other topics on the docket. I really want to get to this. I've been trying to all week, but just never got to it. And it's really in regards to kind of a similar thing to these the cover call ETFs, but the leverage ETFs that are very, very popular. And what the additional costs are to running those. And then what is the recent rally in gold? What does that have to do with Japan? We'll talk about that potentially. And then if we have time, during the government shutdown, there are other economic data points to look at besides what would normally be releases from the government. So we'll look at all of that, plus voice bank calls. One is on data sources, the other is on Starbucks. And of course, we have some questions that came in from the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. But most importantly, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART. But before we go to our first break, I want you to know that you will probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do, you kind of have two options. One, you could schedule a portfolio review with myself or Luke, or you could head over to our website and take a look at our comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. Just came out. It's a free read. You head over there, you'll get a prompt, you'll be able to download it, and it's posted right now on investtalk.com. Now we're moving into a break. My phone lines are open for you at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think is a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a look at the market today. Very interesting day overall, and it was negative. First negative day in a little while. And you had the NASDAQ down 18 points, only 8 basis points, 0.08%. S&P down a little over 0.25%. And the Dow is down a little over 0.5%. Small caps down the most, down about 0.6%. Treasuries were weaker with yields up about 1 basis point overall. The 30-year note auction tailed by 0.4 basis points. So you're starting to see a little treasury market dysfunction. Nothing too crazy, but there are some signs that the market isn't loving these recent bond sales, especially in the long end. Gold finished down 2.4%, now back below 4,000 an ounce. It's very interesting. I talked about this back in April when gold was on the cover of Barron's, and we've owned gold for a while now, killing it with it. But back then I was like, okay, well, if it's hitting in front of Barron's, it needs a cooling off period. And that really started a 3-month consolidation phase into July before it started really breaking out in August. And so you're starting to see it again, a lot of headlines around gold, talking about it on CNBC and elsewhere. And obviously the round number is a magnet for price, and it makes for big headlines. But usually that when you see the headlines, you're a little late to the game, at least in the short term. Just like in April, doesn't mean that you don't buy it, but know that you're probably going to get a better entry point in the coming weeks and months. I'm still bullish. I still think gold goes to 5,000, maybe even higher per ounce in the coming year or two. But do we get a pullback into the 3,600 level on gold in the medium term? It wouldn't shock me at all, especially now with the dollar getting a bid here. Dollar index is up 0.5% on the day. And that kind of sparked a pullback in a lot of the commodity names. And it does look like we're starting that overdue pullback. But if you zoom out, it's still in an uptrend, and dips likely should be bought. Bitcoin futures were down 2%. That was interesting. WTI crude settled off 1.7%, but still up nicely for the week. What else did we have? We are going to head into earnings season. I believe that's next week. So be on the lookout for that. But not a whole lot of economic news to really speak of, especially with the government shutdown. And we did have, it looks like we're getting some sort of deal around Gaza. And that should be overall helpful to sentiment in markets. Now, speaking of sentiment, we'll get consumer sentiment tomorrow. But this is kind of a quiet season until we get to earnings. We are going into blackout periods as well. It's where companies can't buy back shares that usually, because there is a consistent bid to shares in the markets, it can often be a time of softness before earnings season because you don't have that consistent bid because of the blackout period. So be on the lookout for that. So wouldn't that shock me to see a modest pullback in markets as we head into Q3 earnings season. Now, you probably know that we get questions from the YouTube comment section of our Invest Talk channel. And here's one that came in earlier. Greg says, I've been looking at opening a position LKQ with a downsizing in consumer and corporate spending starting to form. I've been thinking about impacts on new and used vehicle sales. LKQ could be in position to take advantage of the most of more people and companies beginning to repair their vehicles versus purchasing replacement vehicles. What are your thoughts? All right, this distributes aftermarket replacement parts to collision repair shops and mechanical repair shops. If I remember correctly, isn't this what First Brands did, the recent large bankruptcy? LKQ is in a strong downtrend. Relative strength is 9. It's right near a 52-week low. Earnings are supposed to fall 10% this year. Bounce back 9% this year, but that's far off now. I don't see a reason to jump it. Why try to catch this falling knife? I wouldn't do it. Especially if you look at its debt. It does have about $6 billion in debt on its balance sheet that it needs to carry. Its free cash flow is solid at $676 million, but that has been on a steady decline since its peak in 2021. So I don't like it. I see no reason to jump in. I understand a bit of your theory around it, but you have to see the backed up by trends in earnings, trends in the chart, etc., and you're just not seeing that. So I would say absolutely not on LKQ. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. So I encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is on mortgage rates and will they keep dropping? Now, they peaked in January, a little over 7% on average. This is talking about the 30-year fixed mortgage rate. And they were hanging in the upper sixes for most of the year. But as of late, they've headed lower and are knocking on the door of a five handle. Now, I am seeing some types of loans with a five handle, meaning, you know, starting with 5 point something, 5.9, 5.95, 5.875, etc. But the average in the final week of at least September was about 6.3%. And this is on the back of the Fed clearly signaling a rate cut, or rate cuts continuing in this month in October. I believe it's on the 29th of October. Yep. And then one more in December. Now, one thing you have to understand about mortgage rates is that they're, what you want to look at is the 10-year. Usually follows the 10-year. And remember, the market is pricing in these rate cuts. So it's not like the Fed's going to cut rates and it's just going to automatically mean lower mortgage rates as soon as they cut. Remember, the market has priced this in. So that's why you saw mortgage rates at 6.26 at the end of the second week of full week of September, bounced up to 6.34, and now they're back to 6.3. There hasn't been much of a reaction to that Fed rate cut last month because it was, once again, it was priced in. Now, for most people, the question is, what does this mean for the housing market? Most people aren't having to worry about buying a house or even refinancing. Why? Because 40% of homes in this country are sold off or paid off. And another 40% refinanced in 2020 or 2021 and have a mortgage rate locked in at around the 3% level. So that leaves only 20% of inventory out there. Do mortgage rates impact them much at all? Because those 80%, for the most part, you're not selling. Now, maybe some of those people pass away, their kids, those that inherit that home, they sell it, etc. That can happen, yes. But that's very minor. Most 99% of that 80% is just sticking there. Okay. So when mortgage rates drop, it can make affordability a bit better. It has. And you're already starting to see buyers come off the sidelines a bit. If you look at volumes, they are ticking up a little bit. And prices are coming down a little bit in most markets. But the affordability issue is not going away unless you get back to 3% mortgages, which I don't think that's going to happen. And so what you're likely to see is that over the next 3 to 5 years, the housing market will stair step lower in a very orderly fashion. Not in an 08 massive drop, but prices dropping in 3 to 5% in any given market. Maybe mortgage rates dip a little bit. And the marginal buyer can now afford that home. And volumes tick up a little bit. But that impacts comps. And then the next people that want to list their homes are looking at those comps that are 3 to 5% lower from the previous year. And then their house stays on the market a little too long because there's still not enough buyers. And they'll cut. And eventually, that's how this will likely evolve. And in 5 years, overall housing prices have corrected 15 to 20% in most markets. Incomes generally go higher because of inflation. And you meet in the middle. And that's the reality. We're not getting an 08. Despite what you might see in the headlines, you might watch some doomer YouTube videos or things like that. There will be issues, but it's not 08. Because there's not bad lending. Like I said, 40% of the market has no debt tied to it. 40%, another 40% has 3% mortgage tied to it, which isn't being forced to sell. And most of those people can afford that payment. Now, should you wait for rates to fall to buy? The simple answer is no. Your home should be a utility to you. And so if it checks all the boxes, you can afford it, yes, you should go and buy. Now, the National Association of Home Builders, they're looking at 6.25% mortgage rate by the end of next year. You know, there's a lot of guesstimates, but ultimately it's going to be about the 10-year treasury market and how orderly it is and what and the inflation dynamics look like over the next 12 months and how that moves markets. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. AI's copper consumption. Is the data center boom driving a looming supply crunch? The rapid global build-out of AI-powered data centers, which are significantly more copper-intensive for power and cooling than traditional facilities, is set to clash with the years of underinvestment in new mines. That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, I'm calling about SBUX, Starbucks Corporation. I know that the current backdrop of the world right now might not be favoring Starbucks, but their stock just hit a long-term support. I was just wondering what you guys thought about the $80 and all the way down to the $70 price point and where you'd be aggressively buying or more so considering Starbucks stock and company given the consumer sentiment as well as the sentiment behind the company. I'll be listening. Thank you so much. Hope all is well.
Thank you for the call. Looking at Starbucks, his name we recently purchased but also recently sold. So you're right, it is near long-term support. We bought it for a bounce. We got the bounce. We sold it because we didn't also see the bounce in earnings trends. In fact, earnings trends continued to deteriorate. And so we sold out of it. Luckily, we did a modest profit. But ultimately, the issue is that earnings continue to be downgraded for this year and next year. So this fiscal, let's go fiscal 25, earnings are expected to be $2.17. Back in October of last year, earnings were expected to be $3.89. So think about that. A year ago, for full year fiscal 2025, it's supposed to be $3.89, and it underperformed, went all the way down to $2.16. That's what's expected, $2.17. For the year. Next year, earnings are expected to bounce back to 263. However, once again, last October for 2025, estimates were $4.36. And you see this, you go all the way up to 2027, $3.27. But those estimates continue to come down. They're shutting down stores. And I just think you have a situation where there's a lot of pressures. There's a lot of stores. The average consumer is getting squeezed. They're making their coffee at home in many instances. And their input costs are going up. Labor, the goods that they're actually producing or buying in to make the coffee, make the drinks, make the food, etc. So they're seeing a lot of pressures on their margins. And the technicals are still not great. Like I said, it rebounded from a low around $71. That was the long-term support. And then it rallied all the way to 116 and now has fallen back down into the 70s, high 70s. So the technicals just remain too poor for my liking. It's a great business, but it's a business that is under a lot of pressure. And so until this resolves itself, I would keep it on the watch list, keep watching it. And frankly, it's still trading at a very high multiple. If they make 250 next year, it's still $70 stock. A company that has negative earnings growth usually trades in the teens from a multiple perspective, maybe even into the single digits. So I think this is a name that probably heads at least into the 50s, maybe even into the 40s. Then I'd start maybe thinking about it. But until then, I'm passing on Starbucks technicals and the earnings trends are just too poor. Now let's play two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hi, this is Andrew from Maine calling with a question about sources of data around stocks. I discovered this website called roic.ai, which I find to be pretty thorough in its data. Particularly, they have a free version, which has basic data, and then you can subscribe for a pretty reasonable amount on an annual basis and get a lot more data. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts about accuracy or any experience with it. Thanks.
I don't have any experience with that website in particular. We have our own tools from FactSet to Morningstar, et cetera, that we pull data from and we've been pulling data from for a long, long time. Now, there's going to be more of these AI-driven platforms that I think have value. The question is, how much additional value do they really have above and beyond normal check? GPT or Perplexity or any of the other models that are out there. And that I don't know. What I will say is that it's very important for you to double check if you're using AI. Double check. I think AI at this point, it's actually good. It's a good guide. It can help push you in the right direction. And bring data quickly and easily to the surface that would take you hours to do yourself. But you need to know where they're pulling that from. One thing we use that has been very helpful, now it's not perfect because it can be old data, but we can pull like Perplexity. You can say, I just want it to pull from SEC filings. Now, once again, You have to verify it. We verify it with FactSet. We verify with other sources, etc. But making it clear where any AI is going to pull the data from is very important. If you're just scraping it off the internet, that is probably not a good data source. If it's pulling it directly from their SEC filings and official sources, academic studies, things like that, that is a lot more valuable. It doesn't mean you don't check. It doesn't mean you don't verify. But from my experience, it's a lot less prone to those errors. So I would explore that website. but don't use it as gospel, because all AI can be wrong, just like humans can be wrong. So make sure you are double checking. Now let's touch a bit on some ETFs that are very, very popular right now. And these are the double, sometimes triple levered single stock ETFs. And there's a lot of these on the quantum computing stocks like Rigetti and D-Wave, etc. And many of them are doing very well because those names are doing very well. And people are chasing the returns. Some of them up hundreds of percent in a single day. Now, if you look at the expense ratios for most of these, you're going to see something that looks fairly reasonable. 1%, 1.5%, etc. But the devil's in the details here. Because there are undisclosed costs that can hit 15 to 20% annually. Now, where does this come from? It basically comes from how they create the leverage. They use instruments called total return swaps that magnify the returns of the underlying asset. Now, where do they go and buy these from? They buy them from banks, big banks that service these companies. And the riskier the underlying stock, the more these return swaps cost. Why? Because the bank has to go in out there and hedge their risk. And they pass along that risk or that cost in a higher price for those return swaps. In many instances, the cost for the swaps is 1.7% of the total assets monthly. So while the expense ratio might be 1.3%, there are additional costs on top of that every single month. So if the higher the implied volatility, the volatility within the particular name, the more expensive these swaps are. And then if implied volatility rises even more because of more hype or more speculation in the name, well, those total return swaps suddenly become more expensive as well. So the smaller the company, typically, the higher the cost here. Doesn't mean that they're not high costs for bigger names like Apple, Nvidia, Tesla, etc. Those are all the kind of the names that first started these single stock levered ETFs. But increasingly, they're going into and launching these ETFs that are linked to smaller, even riskier names, especially connected to AI. So that's why I say it's typical for the total cost of these funds to be 15, 20, 25% annually. So not understanding the costs make you believe something exists that doesn't, that these are relatively low cost to gain leverage. They're not. Now, to be fair, if you wanted to go and lever up your position in qubits, for example, it's going to cost you a lot from your broker. So you are getting around that cost, but there's a even more cost associated with these when you're buying these ETFs. So know that all these levered ETFs in general, whether it's in single stock or on a particular index, they're all trading vehicles. These are not things to buy and hold. Now let's swing back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank question, or Voice Bank right now.
Hi, I'd like to ask about two mining companies, Barrick Mining and Wheaton Precious Metals. I got into Barrick for about $17 a share, and Wheaton Precious Metals at $95 a share. I would like to buy more of both stocks, but they have been shooting straight up, and I wonder if they're overbought or is there still room to run? And then, at what point would you trim or take a profit? Thanks for answering my question.
So, we like both of these names, and we've owned Wheaton for a while. We've owned Barrick in the past. It could be a name we add at some point again in the future. All the mining stocks are overbought. And you saw a pullback today. As I said at the top of the show, it was pretty clear that we were getting pretty close to a cooling off period, a consolidation period, a pullback period. And it looks like that started today. So I would be patient on it. I haven't bought gold miners for new clients in a few weeks. But as these pull back to moving averages, especially like weekly moving averages, that's where I would want to pick these up. So for example, the 50-day moving average of Wheaton is down around 80. Close today around, 103? So could it get a pullback into the mid-80s? I think that would be a great spot to pick it up. As for Barrick, same type of thing. It's overstretched on the weekly chart. Due for a pullback. Due for a consolidation period. And that's what we look like we're getting right now. So all of these, if you've never dealt with gold miners, they can be very wild. You can get a 20, 30% pullback in them like that without even blinking an eye. And so Barrick peaked at 36. Now it's at 33. Down 10% roughly already. Could this get back into the 28 range? That's where I would say is good support on Barrick. Let's tackle a YouTube comment question. Bisco, I love this name. Bisco Discot 24. Love it. Curious about a small cap I came across the other day and what your take would be. M-U-E-L. M-U-E-L is the symbol. And says it seems quite cheap, even after some great performance the past year, return equity in the 40s. I don't love it that it's OTC, but other than that, it seems like a solid company from the numbers I'm seeing. What are your thoughts? Okay. Let's take a look at this. M-U-E-L. Paul Mueller. Yeah, OTC name. Engaged. Oh, wow. This is quite the move. In July of... Let me go to a 5-year chart, 3-year chart. There we go. July of last year is at $80 per share. Now we're at $437 per share. $400 million market cap. Does have a high return on equity, 44%. Go to a... you're right. It does have a high return on equity. Free cash flow, $37 million on enterprise value of $360 million. So you're talking about a 10% free cash flow yield. I will say, historically, it doesn't have this level of profitability. So that's one worry, is can it sustain this level of profitability? Now, what does it do? It makes dairy farm equipment, industrial equipment, field fabrication, transportation, etc. So it's in the dairy industry. I tend to like that. Sells directly to food, beverage, chemical, and industrial processing equipment, biopharmaceutical equipment, and pure water equipment companies. I'm liking it. I like the type of business it is. The worry is, like I said, can it sustain these margins? I would have to really feel comfortable with that. But everything else about it, valuation, the profitability, the balance sheet, the industry that it's in, I like it. So I'm going to give MUEL a thumbs up as long as you have confidence in its business. Now we're heading into a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question before we close up shop today. But barring a call, let's touch on gold. Gold, as I said at the top of the show, is due for a bit of a correction, a bit of a pullback. Cooling off period, shall we say. But the long-term trend is intact. And let's talk about why. We've been long gold for a number of years. Number one, post-COVID, we saw the debasement trade that everyone's talking about today. It was clear back then. It was that no matter what happened, the government was going to come in and point the bazooka at markets and prevent any big deflationary spiral like 08. And so it was clear that the actual risk was not an 08 debt crisis, but the opposite, an inflationary crisis. And we had a taste of that in 2022, but the government had a bit of a way to calm that down a little bit by raising interest rates significantly. But now we're already there. And inflation hasn't abated. It bottomed in the mid-2s in the early summer and starting to reaccelerate in the back half of this year, as once again we expected. But this is not just about the United States, it's a worldwide phenomenon. Gold is going up in price against every currency because gold is the ultimate currency. And Saturday, we had a new prime minister in Japan, and that pushed gold up once again. That's not a coincidence, because the new prime minister, female, she said that she wants to keep rates low and she wants to spend. She wants to double down on fiscal dominance, just as what's happening here in the United States. Now, gold was in a consolidation period from the summer of 2020 all the way until the fall of 2023. And then it broke out to the upside. Now, the first real advance started after the Ukraine war began and Western governments froze Russian assets. And so foreign banks, foreign central banks and foreign governments, they look for assets that could not be seized by another country in any way. And that asset is gold. And it took another leg higher during Liberation Day, when the trade war really undermined the faith in the U.S. as a stabilizer to the global financial system backed by the dollar. And then in August, you had a Fed that cut rates despite inflation well above 2%, heading closer to 3%. And then President Trump trying to fire Lisa Cook and push for a more dovish Fed. And it's pretty clear that over the next 6 to 9 months, there's going to be a shift to the dovish side from the Federal Reserve, which will likely mean lower interest rates, lower dollar. And so historically, gold has been an insurance vehicle against geopolitical instability, as well as economic instability. And that's what you're seeing right now in spades. Gold is the best option besides the dollar. But if you're losing faith in the United States and our ability to govern a controlled financial system, gold is the natural way to express that view. And the eroding faith in all fiat currencies, not just the dollar, but the euro, the yen, etc. And that's what this is about. And so that's why everyone should have some exposure for gold. Maybe not today, but the consolidation period, pullback, you have to be adding. Now, I'm Justin Klein. Today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, taxes, retirement, whether it all really works. Well, we offer a free, no-cost portfolio review to help bring clarity and confidence to your situation. Do you have enough gold? Do you have too much gold? Do you have enough fixed income? Not enough fixed income? Whatever it is, we can talk about it. So head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. You can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or our YouTube channel. Remember to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.